Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 958, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on May 11th of the year 2017. Well, are we having fun yet? For people who hear this down the road, last couple of days have seen Donald Trump fire James Comey, which really is, I guess, proof of the old adage that a broken clock is right twice a day. James Comey should have been, well, he never should have been appointed, and he is bad news. This, however, is drawing comparisons to Watergate. Those are really not very valid. And one of the things that is dominating Washington is that Trump is a cat's paw for Russia and that Russia's interfering in our elections and interfered in France's elections and so forth. And as I have discussed in numerous programs, For the Record 917, 923, 924, and 943, and as I will be talking about in this program as well, the evidence is that Russia did not do the hacks, and in fact, the hacks may very well have been done. There certainly appear to have been hacks, but they did not come from Russian intelligence, which would have done something sophisticated and harder to detect. Rather, this is some real, it's like what I discussed in For the Record 926. It's like the painting of Oswald Red, in particular, Oswald in Mexico City, or quote, Oswald, unquote, in Mexico City. This is a propaganda technique, and one would have to assume that the powerful Russians, the cunning Russians, the sinister Russians are completely stupid and incompetent and self-destructive. And yet they are threatening our democracy. NATO is talking about Russia as an existential threat. It is really, it reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from author Edith Wharton, who observed that, quote, a frivolous society can only achieve dramatic significance through what its frivolity destroys. And that is sadly true. And that this is a frivolous society, I don't think it is going to survive. And lurking beneath the frivolity is at one level utter evil, and at another level, terrible, terrible tragedy. One thing that is becoming only too clear, however, is that it is very late in the day, and now not only mainstream media, but relatively staid and conservative sources are talking about things that I have been talking about for a long, 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 long time, and that I have been poo-pooed for saying, and because I'm going to go Dave Emery again, he's a conspiracy theorist, and I don't believe in conspiracy theory. Ha, ha, ha. Well, you will. We're going to begin with an article from Salon, a relatively mainstream online publication. It is liberal, but it really is not far to the left at all. And indeed, the discussion here is with a guy named Timothy Snyder. That's S-N-Y-D-E-R. He is a history professor at Yale University. I'm not really very impressed with the guy. I think his history, he's kind of a go-to guy these days, and I think much of what he does is somewhat revisionistic, and really not impressed with him, and it would not surprise me one bit if he were actually a CIA intellectual or academician. The involvement of the CIA with institutions like Yale University and the other Ivy League and elite schools could not be exaggerated. Snyder has published a book, however. This is all by way of saying that what we're about to be looking at is not wild-eyed conspiracy theory by any stretch of the imagination. And as we will see later on in the program, discussion of a fascist coup by the Trump administration, something that Snyder is talking about, may really be obviated or rendered irrelevant or obsolete by things that are taking place in the realm of technology. I have spoken about what I call technocratic fascism, and we're going to take a look at some stunning things that are being done with artificial intelligence and companies that people rely on for all kinds of things, Facebook, Amazon, things that are mainstays of American commercial and even civic life at this point. And bear in mind that the developments with these technologies, including and especially applications of artificial intelligence, are taking place in an atmosphere of complete deregulation and complete lack of oversight. And that in and of itself may very well render a fascist coup irrelevant under the circumstances. We're going to conclude by taking a look, too, at the latest Russian intelligence hacks. Really, the hacks are the people saying this is Russian intelligence. In fact, it does not appear to be that at all. There was a hack into Emmanuel Macron's campaign files or computers that supposedly was done by Russia. In fact, it does not appear to be Russia at all. And the evidence is beginning to mount that this is actually coming from the far right. Many documents were put up on the internet via WikiLeaks. One of the things that I have pointed out repeatedly about WikiLeaks for years, it is a fascist network, period. And the guy, one of Julian Assange's most trusted aides, and the guy who arranged for WikiLeaks to hold forth on the Pirate Bay website, originally financed largely by Carl Lundstrom, one of WikiLeaks, one of Europe's most prominent fascists, is a guy named Joran, J-O-R-A-N, Jermas, J-E-R-M-A-S, a.k.a., quote, Israel Shamir, unquote. He is a doctrinaire fascist and a Holocaust denier who has said that, quote, it is the duty of all good Christians and Muslims to deny the Holocaust. And Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Joran Jermas, his real name, is in charge of WikiLeaks operations for Russia and also for other former Soviet states. And he is, as they like to say, alt-right. He's part of the same international milieu with which David Duke networks. Duke, perhaps, the most visible, quote, alt-right supporter of Donald Trump in the campaign. I don't like that term at all, but it is a contemporary euphemism for fascism. It reminds me of the song originally done by the rock group Traffic. Are you feeling alt-right? Well, no, I'm not feeling too good myself, which really is sort of the context. As we get into the Russian hacks, bear in mind that not only is this more clown A blank blank S blank blank blank, where the cunning, sinister subterfuges engineered by the all-powerful, all-evil Russians are basically what one would expect from the Three Stooges. They're just those cunning Russians, that insidious, Russian intelligence service just can't help but blow it. They did it this time as well. They have Cyrillic metadata in the information. But bear in mind, these documents appeared on WikiLeaks, and the guy in charge of WikiLeaks Russian operations is a fascist and a Holocaust denier. So never lose sight of that. And no sooner did Donald Trump fire cruise missiles at Syria, probably for nothing, then once again, drumroll, trumpet flourish, please, the Shadow Brokers, another supposed Russian hacking group that put NSA tools up on the internet, and WikiLeaks then put up on the internet as well. Once again, the Shadow Brokers, with their broken English, made an appearance. However, whereas this is being dismissed once again as Russia or being labeled as Russia, it is looking more and more like they are white supremacists and perhaps even something along the lines of the Oath Keepers. There are indications of that. Or not that it is the Oath Keepers, but someone of that general orientation, an organization or group of individuals of that orientation. The point being that with regard to the Shadow Brokers and also the interests disseminating the alleged Russian hack of Emmanuel Macron's documents, this is tracking to the far right, as did Edward Snowden, as did WikiLeaks. I have been talking about this repeatedly, and this may result in a Third World War.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
First, two articles, however, before we get to the tech stuff. More and more we are seeing, and this is not to boast, we are seeing relatively staid commentators saying things that would have only come from Dave Emery a few years ago, from Salon Magazine of May 1st of 2017, an article by Chauncey DeVega, capital V-E, capital V-E-J-G-A, historian Timothy Snyder, quote, "It's pretty much inevitable," unquote, "that Trump will try to stage a coup and overthrow democracy." What a conspiracy theory that is, huh? This is on the, I guess, intellectual platform of a new book that Snyder, again, a history professor from Yale University, someone who I don't think is all that impressive in and of himself. He is a go-to guy. Wouldn't surprise me if he was actually agency, i.e. CIA. He published a book called On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. Vega knows, he opines here, "In my writing and interviews, I have consistently referred to Donald Trump as a fascist. I have received a great deal of resistance to that claim." Do you think this description is correct? If not, then what language should we use to describe Donald Trump? And Snyder then goes on, and this will be in the written description for the program. He talks about the fact that when you say something like that, Americans really don't have anything to compare that with. And so he doesn't think that this is an altogether inappropriate statement. It is very appropriate. And Trump, really, the mistake that's being made by so many is they're looking at Donald Trump as somehow different from the Republican Party, which, dating back to the late 1940s and the genesis of the Crusade for Freedom, was heavily networked not only with the intelligence community, but with elements that were allied with the Third Reich, Eastern European, Galen, ABN fascists like the OUNB from Ukraine, the Romanian Iron Guard, the Bulgarian National Front, the Croatian Ustashi, the Slovakian Linka Party, and similar interests. Those elements coalesced in the coup that took place on November 22nd, 1963. So, seeing Donald Trump, as I talked about in For the Record 894, seeing Donald Trump as somehow different from the Republican Party as a whole is a huge, huge mistake. The Republican Ethnic Heritage Outreach Council is a Nazi branch of the Republican Party. However, people are suddenly saying, wow, how did this happen? Well, how could it not have happened? The full article will be in the written description for the show, but skipping down, Chauncey DeVega then asks of Timothy Snyder, in your book, you discuss the idea that Donald Trump will have his own version of Hitler's Reichstag fire to expand his power and take full control of the government by declaring a state of emergency. How do you think that would play out? And Snyder then responds, let me make just two points. The first is that I think it's pretty much inevitable that they will try. The reason I think that is that the conventional ways of being popular are not working out for them. The conventional way to be popular or to be legitimate in this country is to have some policies to grow your popularity ratings and to win some elections. I don't think 2018 is looking very good for the Republicans along those conventional lines. Not just because the president is historically unpopular, it's also because neither the White House nor Congress have any policies which the majority of the public like. This means they could be seduced by the notion of getting into a new rhythm of politics, one that does not depend upon popular policies and electoral cycles. Skipping down. What are some of the more difficult and challenging things that people can do? The last lesson on tyranny is to be as courageous as you can. This, by the way, is something I very much endorse. The last lesson in on tyranny is to be as courageous as you can. Do you actually care enough about freedom that you would take risks? Do individuals actually care about freedom? Think that through. I think if enough of us take the little risks at the beginning, which aren't really that significant, this will prevent us from having to take bigger risks down the line. We are still at a stage where protest is not illegal. We are still at a stage where protest is not lethal. Those are two big thresholds. We are still on the good side of both of those thresholds, and now is the time you want to pack in as much as you can because you could actually divert things. Once you get into a world where protest is illegal, then the things that I recommend, like corporeal politics, getting out on the streets, they have to happen, but they are much riskier. It's a much different kind of decision. I would counsel people to write letters to the editors of papers, call talk shows, and use the internet above all. Street demonstrations, in my opinion, really don't do much. Vote and use the media. Then, this is very interesting here. Chauncey DeVega then asks Timothy Snyder, how much time does American democracy have left before this poison becomes lethal and there is no path of return? And Snyder answers, you have to accept that there is a time frame. Nobody can be sure how long this particular regime change with Trump will take, but there is a clock, and the clock really is ticking. It's 3 years on the outside, but in more likelihood, something like a year. One more time. You have to accept that there is a time frame. Nobody can be sure how long this particular regime change with Trump will take, but there is a clock, and the clock really is ticking. It's 3 years on the outside, but in more likelihood, something like a year. Interjecting briefly some of my concerns about the awful people that Bernie Sanders has been ushering into the Democratic Party, and people who will just be perfect to demonize in the event of a major Reichstag fire-like terrorist incident. Well, I've talked about that in For the Record 953 and in other shows, and it is against the background of just exactly what Timothy Snyder is talking about here, that I see people like Keith Ellison, whom St. Bernard and others were touting as the ideal candidate to head the DNC. He's now deputy chair of the DNC. And people like Faisal Gill, a Grover Norquist protege, and having him now head of the Vermont Democratic Party. This is perfect. Absolutely made to bleep an order for just exactly what Timothy Snyder is talking about here. So if some of you going, oh, Game Emmy didn't like Bernie Sanders, just take a good look at what Snyder is saying here. That is exactly what I have been concerned. Well, that Sanders doing things like promoting open primaries for all of the Democratic primaries, which will permit the Republicans to choose the Democratic candidate. That is my concern. Another thing I would point out is that something along the lines of 75 of 80 fracking wells here in the state of California are along earthquake faults. They are, and this seems completely insane, but they are pumping fracking wastewater into earthquake faults here in California. This has raised the possibility, or increased the time frame in which the certainty of a major quake, either in L.A. or the Bay Area, or now both, that the possibility of the big one hitting L.A. or Southern California and Northern California at the same time has been increased by this. This would destroy California, collapse the economy, perhaps lead to the cancellation of an election because with our largest state in ruins because of one or more major quakes, either in Southern and or Northern California, well, can't have an election. And that would, nobody would blame Trump for that. I would point out that the EU Germany now has a Project HARP, which I have spoken about in many of my programs, in my discussions with Nick Begich, and in programs about the Project HARP and Tesla technology. The technology to cause earthquakes is, in fact, in existence. The U.S. and the former Soviet Union had a treaty about environmental warfare, including earthquakes, on the books by the late 1970s. And with no environmental regulation whatsoever under the Trump administration, with the EPA being gutted, and with, again, just unbelievable, in California, 75 of 80 fracking wastewater wells are on earthquake faults. That could be another type of Reichstag fire, and no one would blame Trump. And the EU, read Germany, read Underground Reich, now has that technology. Of course, even if it is a terrorist incident, and one of the things that the public has not paid much attention to, and something we have covered at great length in, among other shows, For the Record 456, are the Nazi and fascist connections to the September 11th attacks. So some of the, quote, alt-right, unquote, people linked to Donald Trump are of the milieu that assisted the Islamist fascists with the September 11th attacks. Again, For the Record, 956 goes into that.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Another delightful thing. We may not be told too much about what is going on. From Talking Points Memo, the editor's blog by Josh Marshall from April 30th of 2017. Priebus, Trump considering amending or abolishing First Amendment. A number of press reports have picked up this exchange this morning between ABC's Jonathan Karl, K-A-R-L, and White House Chief of Staff Rince Priebus. But people have missed the real significance. Priebus doesn't discuss changing, quote, press laws, unquote, or libel laws, unquote. He specifically says that the White House has considered and continues to consider amending or even abolishing the First Amendment because of critical press coverage of President Trump. Sound hyperbolic? Look at the actual exchange. Carl, I want to ask you about two things the president has said on related issues. First of all, there was what he said about opening up the libel laws. Tweeting, quote, the failing New York Times has disgraced the media world, gotten me wrong for two solid years, changed the libel laws, unquote. Priebus. I think that's something that we've looked at. How that gets executed or whether that goes anywhere is a different story. But when you have articles out there that have no basis or fact and we're sitting here on 24/7 cable companies writing stories about constant contacts with Russia and all these other matters, Carl, so you think the president should be able to sue the New York Times for stories he doesn't like? Priebus. Here's what I think. I think that newspapers and news agencies need to be more responsible with how they report the news. I am so tired. Carl, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. It's about whether or not the president should have a right to sue them. Priebus, and I already answered the question. I think this is something that is being looked at. But it's something that, as far as how it gets executed, where we go with it, that's another issue. Carl says accurately that that kind of clampdown on First Amendment rights would require amending the Constitution. Is that what Priebus means? Carl asks. Yes, it is, says Priebus. Now, one might respond to this saying, okay, technically that's what he said, but he probably doesn't actually mean it. To which I think the answer is, sure, he doesn't mean it, but why would anyone assume that? He said it and repeated it. And the full story is in the written description for this program that will be published a few days after it airs. Also from Talking Points, Livewire by Matt Shuham, S-H-U-H-A-M, or Shuham, from May 1st of 2017. White House doubles down, targeting press with libel laws being looked into. The White House maintained on Monday that it is looking into ways to create libel laws in order to sue publications that print unflattering or untrue coverage of the president. White House spokesperson Sean Spicer doubled down on Monday, quote, is that a project that is currently being worked on by the counsel's office? The New York Times' Glenn Thrush asked, referring to Priebus' statements. Can you tell me the status of that? Who is pursuing that? I think the chief of staff made it very clear that it's something that is being looked into substantively and then both logistically. How it would happen, Spicer said. But that's nothing new. It's something the president talked about on the campaign trail, unquote. Is the counsel actually, Thrush attempted? I will not go into it, Spicer said. And I would add to that, this not only, obviously, I think I don't need to explain what is so alarming about that, but simply this kind of intimidation is likely to accelerate the already grotesque drift toward absolute lying by the mainstream media. Really, it goes back a long ways. When the President of the United States can get his brains blown out in Dallas, Texas, and it quite obviously is done by fascist elements within our national security establishment, CIA and military, and with allied elements in the political radical right, and nobody does anything about it, including the New York Times, which won't say anything about it. They then publish the Warren Report. We are already moving very quickly toward the Orwellian 1984 Ministry of Truth. This is only going to accelerate that, and in a media environment in which people in the, quote, working press, unquote, are already being pressed not to write stories that won't go well with commercial sponsors or with the government. This is in and of itself sort of what Jim Garrison, New Orleans DA, who investigated JFK's assassination, called intimidation by induction. As if the articles we have already looked at, the relatively mainstream discussion of Donald Trump staging a military coup or either amending or bludgeoning via libel suits into irrelevance the First Amendment, that may all become sort of irrelevant, because there are things that are taking place now in the realm of tech that are really quite remarkable, and they may render the entire concept of democracy completely irrelevant. From the Gizmodo blog, Kristen V. Brown has the following to say from April 19th of 2017. Facebook literally wants to read your thoughts. At Facebook's annual developer conference F8 on Wednesday, the group unveiled what may be Facebook's most ambitious and creepiest proposal yet. Facebook wants to build its own brain-to-computer interface that would allow us to send thoughts straight to a computer. What if you could type directly from your brain? Regina Dugan, D-U-G-A-N, the head of the company's secretive hardware R&D division, Building 8, asked from the stage. Dugan then proceeded to show a video demo of a woman typing 8 words per minute directly from the stage. In a few years, she said, the team hopes to demonstrate a real-time silent speech system capable of delivering 100 words per minute. Quote, that's 5 times faster than you can type on your smartphone, and it's straight from your brain, she said. Your brain activity contains more information than what a word sounds like or how it's spelled. It also contains semantic information of what those words mean, unquote. Brain-computer interfaces are nothing new. DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which Dugan used to head, one more time, this is, again, Regina Dugan, who is the head of the company's secretive hardware R&D division, okay? Brain-computer interfaces are nothing new. DARPA, which Dugan used to head, she's the former head of this, has invested heavily in brain-computer interface technologies to do things like cure mental illness and restore memories to soldiers injured in war. But what Facebook is proposing is perhaps more radical, a world in which social media doesn't require picking up a phone or tapping a wristwatch in order to communicate with your friends, a world where we're connected all the time by thought alone. Skipping down. This from the head of D or F8, the mysterious R&D, Building 8, the R&D division of Facebook, the former head of DARPA. Okay, skipping down. Dugan adds that it's also possible to, quote, listen, unquote, to human speech by using your skin. It's like using Braille, but through a system of actuators and sensors. Dugan showed a video example of how a woman could figure out exactly what objects were selected on a touch screen based on inputs delivered through a connected armband. Facebook's Building 8 is modeled after DARPA, and its projects tend to be equally ambitious. Brain-computer interface technology is still in its infancy. So far, researchers have been successful in using it to allow people with disabilities to control paralyzed or prosthetic limbs. But stimulating the brain's motor cortex is a lot simpler than reading a person's thoughts and then translating those thoughts into something that might actually be read by a computer. Skipping down. Facebook hopes to use optical neural imaging technology to scan the brain 100 times per second. One more time. Facebook hopes to use optical neural imaging technology to scan the brain 100 times per second to detect thoughts and turn them into text. Meanwhile, it's working on skin hearing, unquote, that can translate sounds into haptic feedback that people can learn to understand like Braille. Dugan insists, quote, none of the work that we do that is related to this will be absent of these kinds of institutional review boards. So at least there will be independent ethicists working to minimize the potential for malicious use of Facebook's brain reading technology to steal or police people's thoughts. Yeah. Sure. There will be. Take a look at, for the record, program number 946, I believe it is, in your Facebook, a virtual panopticon, part two. Peter Thiel, one of Trump's top supporters, big and real big guy in Facebook. You have hardcore Republicans now heading the Facebook news division. There effectively will be no break on this kind of thing. The point with this is, well, there are a lot of points. By the way, all of this is being rolled out in a political era of complete deregulation. So this bland assurance of independent ethicists will be working to minimize the potential for malicious use of Facebook's brain reading technology to steal or police people's thoughts. This technology will automatically go two ways. If you can use brain waves to control an artificial prosthesis or to type, somebody can monitor those brain waves. Already, the keystrokes on the computer, which basically the information in a chip travels at the speed of light, impulses along the human nervous system travel much more slowly. This same technology can be used to tap your goddamn brain. I mean, people may have thought I was off the wall or had lost it when I was at, not aside from the fact that Eddie Snowden is CIA, not NSA, but CIA, and a raving fascist with his, the elderly wouldn't be effing helpless if you'd stop sending them effing checks so they can sit on their A blank blanks in hospitals all day. Words to that effect. But I've been telling people the last thing you ought to be worried about is the NSA. You should be worried about damn near everything else in the technology field. People are worried about the NSA tapping their emails or monitoring their emails. These tech companies monitor every aspect of what you're doing, every aspect of it, and they are not benign. And now the technology exists to tap your brain, literally to monitor your brain. This is surreal. Skipping down. Worryingly, Dugan, again, the former head of DARPA, now heading up Building 8, Facebook's secretive R&D division. Worryingly, Dugan eventually appeared frustrated in response to my inquiries about how her team thinks about safety precautions for brain interfaces, saying, "The flip side of the question that you're asking is, why invent it at all?" Unquote. And I just believe that the optimistic perspective is that, on balance, technological advances have meant really good things for the world if they're handled responsibly, unquote. Facebook's domination of social networking and advertising give it billions in profit per quarter to pour in to R&D. For the record, 952, I said, the update on technocratic fascism, be afraid, be very afraid. Yeah, you better be very, 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 very afraid, but keep your thoughts to yourself. Oh, wait a minute. That isn't going to be possible anymore. I mean, talking about Donald Trump abolishing the First Amendment or staging a Reichstag fire type event, I mean, that is scary enough. But all the things that I'm talking about here will make that irrelevant. You're going to have powerful corporations. Who the hell is overseeing Facebook? All this stuff is being rolled out in a regulation-free environment. And the gal who's heading up Facebook's Building 8 R&D is the former goddamn head of DARPA. I mean, this is just surreal.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
More from the Gizmodo blog. Facebook handed over data on insecure, unquote, and overwhelmed, unquote, teenagers to advertisers by Michael Nunez, MUNEZ, from May 1st of 2017. Facebook probably knows more about you than your own family, and the company often uses these types of insights to help sell you products. The best or worst new example of this comes from the newspaper The Australian, which says it got its hands on some leaked internal Facebook documents. The 23-page document allegedly revealed that the social network provided detailed data about teens in Australia, including when they felt overwhelmed, unquote, and anxious, unquote, to advertisers. And by the way, using Facebook, that technology that Dugan is developing, they can monitor this. They'll know when teenagers or anyone else is overwhelmed and anxious. I mean, this is surreal. The creepy implication is that said advertisers could then go and use the data to throw more ads down the throat of sad and susceptible teens. From the paywall report, by monitoring posts, pictures, interactions, and internet activity in real time, Facebook can work out when young people feel stressed, defeated, overwhelmed, anxious, nervous, stupid, silly, useless, and a, quote, failure, unquote, the document states. And bear in mind that all of this wonderful stuff will be accessible to the artificial intelligence and the billions of dollars worth of supercomputers that Robert Mercer and his lovely daughter Rebecca, both of whom have Steve Bannon as a top advisor, are running, and that they used on behalf of Donald Trump. When I said be afraid, be very afraid, update on technocratic fascism, that was the title for the record 952. I can't really say on the radio what I should say in response to this, is you better be scared bleepless. I mean, you better be so bleeping scared that, but again, you better keep your thoughts to yourself. Oh, wait a minute. You won't be able to do that. Never mind, like the old Saturday Night Live character. More. This from the Vice Motherboard. Amazon wants to put a camera and microphone in your bedroom. This by Jason Kober, K-O-E-B-L-E-R, from April 26th of 2017. Again, what I've been telling you, you should not worry about the NSA. That is about the last goddamn thing you ought to be worried about. You ought to be worried about everything else. Facebook, Amazon, Apple. Oh, I mean, this is surreal. This is from April 26th of 2017. And the full articles are in the written descriptions for the show. Amazon is giving Alexa eyes, and it's going to let her judge your outfits. The newly announced Echo Look is a virtual assistant with a microphone and a camera that's designed to go somewhere in your bedroom, bathroom, or wherever the hell you get dressed. Amazon is pitching it as an easy way to snap pictures of your outfits to send to your friends when you're not sure if your outfit is cute. But it's also got a built-in app called Style Check that is worth some further dissection. You cool, and then some examples. You cool with an algorithm, machine learning, and fashion specialists, unquote, deciding whether you look attractive today. Just dovetail this, by the way, with the overwhelmed or insecure teenagers that Amazon was exploiting in Australia. One more time. You cool with an algorithm, machine learning, and fashion specialists, unquote, deciding whether you look attractive today. What sorts of built-in biases will an AI fashion, artificial intelligence fashionista have? It's worth remembering that a recent artificial intelligence judged beauty contest picked primarily white winners. You cool with Amazon having the capability to see and perhaps catalog every single article of clothing you own? Who needs a Calvin Klein dash button if your Echo can tell you when you need new underwear? Will Alexa prevent you from buying a pair of JNCOs? You cool with Amazon putting a camera in your bedroom? Amazon store images and videos taken by Echo Look indefinitely, the company told us. Audio recorded by the original Echo has already been sought out in a murder case. To its credit, Amazon fought a search warrant in that case. All photos and videos captured with your Echo Look are securely stored in the AWS cloud and locally in the Echo Look app until the customer deletes them, unquote, a spokesperson for the company said. You can delete the photos or videos associated with your account anytime in the Echo Look app. Motherboard also asked if Echo Look photos, videos, and the data gleaned from them would be sold to third parties. The company did not address that question. This all, by the way, rests on Amazon behaving with integrity. And you know, you can delete them all you want, but the company is going to have records of this. More of this from the Verge blog. Amazon's Echo Look is a minefield of artificial intelligence and privacy concerns. What does Amazon want to learn from pictures of its customers? The company won't say. This by James Vincent from the Verge blog of April 27th of 2017. Skipping down. This might seem overly speculative or alarmist to some, but Amazon isn't offering any reassurance that they won't be doing more with data gathered from the Echo Look. When asked if the company would use machine learning to analyze users' photos for any purpose other than fashion advice, a representative simply told The Verge that they, quote, can't speculate on the topic. That's great. I mean, that really makes me feel good. Continuing, pardon me, editorial interjection, but this is, well, it speaks for itself. The rep did stress that users can delete videos and photos taken by the Look at any time, but until they do, it seems this content will be stored indefinitely on Amazon's servers. This non-denial means the Echo Look could potentially provide Amazon with the resource every AI company craves, data. And full-length photos of people taken regularly in the same location would be a particularly valuable data set. Even more so if you combine this information with everything else Amazon knows about its customers, their shopping habits, for one. But when asked whether the company would ever combine these two data sets, an Amazon rep only gave the same canned answer. Can't speculate, unquote. What that means, people, is the answer is yes. Okay, they say, well, we won't share it with third parties. This is relying on Amazon to do everything right. This is assuming that a consummately powerful company will do everything right. Oh, by the way, the CIA's files, their data files, are stored with Amazon. About Echo Look here. The company did, though, say it wouldn't share any personal information gleaned from the Echo Look to, quote, advertisers or the third-party sites that display our interest-based ads, unquote. That means Amazon could still use data from the Look to target ads at you itself, but at least third parties won't. And still more, this from The Guardian, about the nature of artificial intelligence. AI programs exhibit racial and gender biases, research reveals. This is by Hannah Devlin, their science correspondent, from The Guardian of Thursday, April 13th of 2017, about artificial intelligence. As machines are getting closer to acquiring human-like language capabilities, they are also absorbing the deeply ingrained biases concealed within the patterns of language use, the latest research reveals. Joanna Bryson, a computer scientist at the University of Bath and the co-author, said, quote, a lot of people are saying this is showing that AI is prejudiced. No, this is showing Uyghur prejudice and that AI is learning it, unquote. But Bryson warned that AI has the potential to reinforce existing biases because, unlike humans, algorithms may be unequipped to consciously counteract learned biases, unquote. A danger would be if you had an AI system that didn't have an explicit part that was driven by moral ideas. That would be bad, skipping down. The latest paper shows that some more troubling implicit biases seen in human psychology experiments are also readily acquired by algorithms. The word female and woman are more closely associated with arts and humanities occupations and with the home, while male and man were closer to math and engineering professions. Skipping down again. The findings suggest that algorithms have acquired the same biases that lead people in the UK and US at least to match pleasant words and white faces in implicit association tests. These biases can have a profound impact on human behavior. One previous study showed that an identical CV is 50% more likely to result in an interview invitation if the candidate's name is European-American than if it is African-American. The latest results suggest that algorithms, unless explicitly programmed to address this, will be riddled with the same social prejudices. In a previous program, by the way, we took a look at how Tay, an artificial intelligence bot, quickly acquired white supremacist behavior and language from people who visited that site. Once again, we're being told that the Russians are hacking things. This in the wake of the French presidential elections. The German/EU-favored candidate Emmanuel Macron won handily. And this is not an endorsement, of course, of Marine Le Pen. But one of the things that we're now being told is that Russia hacked the French election. From the International Business Times of May 6th of 2017 by Jason Murdoch, guilt by volume. Macron leaks failed to shock experts, but can it influence the election? And Matt Swish, S-U-I-C-H-E, I may be mispronouncing that, a cybersecurity expert. Swish analyzed some of the leaked data and found that some of the documents had been altered. Artifacts containing Cyrillic characters have been found in the metadata of some documents, but this is either an operational mistake or something that was placed on purpose, he said, skipping down. The leak that they, actually, let me repeat this. Sleesh analyzed some of the leaked data and found some of the documents had been altered. Artifacts containing Cyrillic characters have been found in the metadata of some documents. This is either an operational mistake or something that was placed on purpose, he said. Again, this sounds, it's the same thing we've seen in the other hacks or alleged hacks, supposedly done by Russia, and the Russian intelligence service just can't help but indicate, yep, here we are, we're Russian intelligence, and we're going to hack the French election just like we hacked the U.S. election. We're going to put some Cyrillic metadata in here. Yep, and this way we'll do immeasurable damage to our country and to our political fortunes. Hey, folks, why do you think they call us Russian intelligence? It is a joke. It's like the painting of Oswald Red. No intelligence service is going to do this unless it is a rival intelligence service creating a cyber false flag operation. As we looked at in For the Record 943, however, so much of this alleged Russian hacking could be done by anybody. Skipping down. The leaked data was first posted to the political message board on 4chan, a website often associated with leaks and trolling. According to the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab, it was quickly publicized on Twitter by the alt-right account @JackPosobiec, P-O-S-O-B-I-E-C, the account of a reporter for the alt-right news site The Rebel Media. The link was later tweeted by the official WikiLeaks account. Atlantic Council, by the way, financed by NATO, the U.S. State Department, the Baltic States, Latvia, Lithuania, and Lithuania, the Ukrainian World Congress, and a prominent Ukrainian oligarch. Skipping down. Robert Graham, a cybersecurity expert. Obviously, everyone assumes that Russian hackers did it, but there's nothing so far that points to anybody in particular, Graham noted. It appears to be the most basic of phishing attacks, which means anyone could have done it, including your neighbor's pimply-faced teenager. And note that this is being disseminated by alt-right, unquote, media people. And from Reuters, French candidate Macron claims massive hack as emails leak. This is by Eric Ocharb, A-U-C-H-A-R-D, and Bait Felix from May 6th of 2017. Skipping down, the Kremlin has denied it was behind any such attacks, even though Macron's camp renewed complaints against Russian media and the hackers group operating in Ukraine. Vitaly Kremez, that's a nice Anglo-Saxon name, isn't it? K-R-E-M-E-Z, director of research with New York-based cyber intelligence firm Flashpoint, told Reuters. His review indicates that APT-28, a group tied to the GRU, the Russian Military Intelligence Directorate, was behind the leak. He cited similarities with U.S. election hacks that had been previously attributed to that group. APT last month registered decoy internet addresses to mimic the name of En Marche, which it likely used to send tainted emails to hack into the campaign's computers. Skipping down again, Ben Nemo, a UK-based security researcher with the Digital Forensic Research Lab of the aforementioned Atlantic Council think tank, said initial analysis indicated that a group of U.S. far-right online activists were behind early efforts to spread the documents via social media. They were later picked up and promoted by core social media supporters of Le Pen in France. Basically, a cyber false flag operation coming from the far right. We talked about APT 28 and 29. Those are the original supposed Russian hacks into the Bundestag. It now turns out that the information that was released was actually from an as yet unidentified insider who downloaded the information onto a flash drive. And as we've looked at in For the Record 943, and there will be information in this program as well, but from that, APT-28 and APT-29, so those are the Cozy Bear or Fancy Bear, could have been anybody, and indeed the online hacking tools used for this would have made anybody able to do this, basically. I've forgotten which is Cozy Bear, which is Fancy Bear. Could be Mama Bear, Papa Bear, the three little bears, and Bleep and Goldilocks as well. It does not add up. And no sooner did the Trump administration fire cruise missiles at Syria than guess who reappeared? That's right. It was the shadow brokers with their broken English from McClatchy, D.C. Mysterious group posts more alleged NSA hacking tools, Russia link, suspected, and what I'm going to talk about in this, and I'm going to have to take this up in a future program, the information from the latest shadow brokers posting, and I've talked about this in past programs, points squarely to the, quote, alt-right, unquote. I'll have the information in the description for the program, but I'll have to take this up in the future program. This concludes For the Record program number 958, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates, being recorded on May 11th of 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.